Hey guys, welcome to today's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. Today we are talking all about food rules. So if you've been listening to our podcast, you know that we've dove into intuitive eating and basically questioning, you know, this whole idea of what we eat, why we eat, and everything that comes around eating. So we're going to dive into some of those rules, and our goal is for you to question, why do I think these things around food, and why do I even have these rules? And maybe you'll have a little bit of clarity around your own eating habits and try some new things. All right, on to the show.
Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour with your hosts, Katie Hake and Lauren Wrighton.
Food rules. Think back to like some weird thing that came into your head, some weird rule.
Yeah, I definitely have had these moments since my eyes have kind of been open to this intuitive eating. And it's I can't think of a specific thing right now, but probably just in general of like, no, I shouldn't be eating this. No, I shouldn't be eating this much of this. It's like I give myself the permission, and then I like, after I'm done, this just habit sometimes to go to that guilt zone. Not all the time, but it still creeps in. What about you?
For me, I think back to a time, or I hear this all the time with clients and patients of, well, I'm going to eat good food. And I was really bad. I ate a lot of bad food this weekend, and labeling food as good versus bad.
Yeah. And you know what? Actually, the thing that keeps kind of reoccurring for me is labeling the food that Sammy's eating. In my own head. Now, I'm good about not saying stuff. Like, I try not to even say, like, Sammy, you need to eat more, you need to eat less. I try not to even say that kind of stuff. And this is a whole different topic. But I will even think to myself, like, how much good food has she had and how much bad food has she had? And it's so hard to retrain that. That is probably, like, the hardest thing for me. And I understand it conceptually, but in my life, it's hard.
And we've been ingrained by society, by all these different rules, by the food marketing companies and the food industry of just like labeling with food. And today we want to take a step back and share with you what we've learned about these food rules and some of the questions that we've come up with of how freaking dumb some of these rules are, and hopefully have you question like why.
And I think the wild thing that I need to point out is that I bet it was only like a year ago that we were sitting on this podcast giving out rules to try. Like, I remember there was an episode that we did where we said, try this rule out. Try eliminating certain food groups. See if it makes you feel better. And like, yeah, there's like sensitivities and blah, blah, blah. But like, so many of these food rules, they started maybe with like a good intention, but we just follow them blindly, or we Google tips to lose weight and these common food rules come up and we have to question them, like, why am I doing this and is this right for me?
The first wacko rule is no eating after 7. I hear this all the time, every single day of, well, I've really tried and then I stop eating after 6, or I stop eating after 8, or they give some certain time of when we have to stop eating.
Yeah, I remember a long time ago hearing like, after dinner, you should close down your kitchen, and then no one eats after that. And I see this in my extended family where there's certain, like the older generation ahead of us, they'll have these certain, I see them as like, they're more cultural rules, I think, than versus like diet rules, but it's like no snacking. I think in like, at least in my experience, the generation above us, it's like, you don't snack. You eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it's like, well, that has been a fad where that was the right thing to do. And then there's been fads of eat 6 meals. And now it's like, actually, no, you actually need to eat in an 8-hour window, aka intermittent fasting. Like, tangent. But the idea, the premise of just like shutting down your kitchen and just like, nope, everyone's finished. It's too black and white. And if there's one thing we know, it's that black and white doesn't work.
And if it were as simple as no eating after 7, there wouldn't be an obesity epidemic. We wouldn't be on this podcast discussing nutrition. I mean, people wouldn't struggle with food in all these different situations if it were as simple as just, oh, shut the kitchen down and that will solve all your problems.
That reminds me of this other food rule, and I'm going off of our list, but why not, right? It's our podcast, is that eating is emotional, and that's okay. We always talk about emotional eating as if it's always bad, but food is emotional. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I value your perspective over my own in this regard, but like, is emotional eating something that we're trying to manage or eliminate? I know you're not going to say eliminate, but like, if we're not trying to manage it, then what are we trying to do with emotional eating?
That's kind of a loaded question and definitely could be a whole nother topic. But with emotional eating, it's not necessarily getting rid of it, but it's finding the triggers and the causes and almost diving deeper for the reasons behind eating whatever it is.
So would you say that with emotional eating that it's okay to emotional eat because that's our culture, but it's more about like, we don't want to rely on food as our...
It's finding tools to do instead of using food as a coping mechanism, I think is... So I think managing emotional eating would probably be an appropriate way to word that.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, that was just like one that all stemmed from not eating after 7. Any other thoughts on that one?
It's just not black and white. And I think if you're the kind of person, and we've talked about this, you and I, how you're a black and white person and I'm a little more gray. And I think if you are a black and white person, that's something maybe you'd question, you know, why is it that things have to be black and white for me? I think of clients who come to me and say, well, I just need a meal plan and you just need to tell me what to eat and when to eat and I'll do it. Well, why is it that you need that structure or those rigid rules?
I know for me, 100%, it was because I didn't trust myself around food because I was trying so hard to control. And that's like one of the things that I am always trying to work on in my life in general is to like release control over things because I'm just like a controlaholic. I don't like to say control freak, but I just like, I feel a lot better when I'm in control. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that can agree with that because I know it's not, that's a big thing. But with food, it's like, I can have what I want if I can just control the situation. And yet, the harder you try to like grasp onto that, the more it kind of slips from your fingers. Because the more you try to, in my opinion, in my experience, personal experience, the more I tried to control what I was eating and control what I was doing, the more like unhappy I became. And the more I found myself doing all of these negative things like guilt and shame and binging and all of the bad things, I felt like I was doing more the harder I tried to control it. So black and white does not work for me, although it is my go-to.
It's definitely something to think about.
All right, so number 2 is craving conversions. So I'm sure you guys have seen this on social media. It's like if you are craving chocolate, you should have blueberries, or you should have magnesium because that's actually what you're really craving. This brings up another topic. It's kind of like saying if you're craving a brownie, don't eat a real brownie, eat the brownie flavored protein shake. And it has been proven that if you were to just eat the brownie, that you would be satisfied. And there's a lot to say about the satisfaction factor versus if you were to eat the protein shake, it really doesn't do the job because it's not a brownie. Okay, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some science linked to nutrient deficiencies and cravings, but that's like in extreme. You guys may have heard of pica, where you crave ice or dirt, you know, and that's an extreme thing. Or people who have an iron deficiency tend to crave ice. But we're talking about the things you see on Instagram where, like Lauren said, if you're craving chocolate, well, you must be magnesium deficient or you just want a piece of chocolate. Like you kind of have to go back to the fact of, you know, asking yourself, well, are you depriving yourself or, you know, what is it that, why are you having these cravings? Is it Is it some sort of, like we talked about, an emotional link to, well, when you're sad, maybe you crave cookies because that's what you did with your mom when you were growing up, is your mom always gave you cookies. So kind of ask yourself and question a little bit deeper. I mean, yes, there could be a nutrient deficiency, but for the most of us, and probably you listening, that's not the case. And it goes back to having that restriction mentality and having these restrictions behind food, that the more we restrict, you're going to quote unquote crave whatever item it is that you're putting off limits.
Okay, here's another. I found a chart online and it's saying one of the examples is if you're craving sugary foods, which sugary foods, that could not be more broad. Like, come on. If you're craving sugary foods, one of the reasons is you might be sulfur deficient. You might have a sulfur deficiency and therefore you should eat horseradish, cabbage, or cauliflower. Come on. So like I want a muffin, but actually I should eat horseradish.
Because that's clearly going to make you feel better. Like, if you just think about it in that perspective, say that out loud, what you're reading and what bullshit you're being fed. Like, that's ridiculous. You may be full, but you're not going to be satisfied with those kind of swaps.
And I'm just not a big fan of treating your body like a machine. Because, yes, our bodies are amazing machines, but we are also human beings with feelings and thoughts and not just machines. And so I think thinking that like, okay, my body is requiring sugar, it must be phosphorus deficient, okay, I will eat grains, like, that's just, to me, it's like, no, like, tune into like what is going on in your mind as well.
I think if it's something weird, like you just think this is weird things that you're craving, like, okay, then maybe go to your primary care physician and get a lab draw of the typical, you know, vitamins and minerals, and you maybe you'll be deficient. And then you can rest assured that no, you're not deficient in magnesium. You just are human and want a piece of chocolate.
Yeah. And we've gotten questions about period cravings, and I just don't know enough about this. Katie, let me know if you do, but I would love to have someone on the podcast that could maybe speak to that a little bit more. What do you think?
There actually are studies that show when you are menstruating, due to the excess blood and extra, I guess, work you could say your body is doing, you do typically need an average of 500 calories more per day. So that could be a hormone response that you're hungrier. But I think that that word craving, again, we have to be careful with it. Is it that's what you're craving, or you just have these hormonal things going on and that's what you've always done and that's what everybody always says? And so we almost, I don't want to say use it as an excuse, but it's kind of what society has told us. And I think this is similar to pregnant women, and not to bash pregnant women at all, but that concept of eating for two is again kind of a myth. The amount of food that you actually need in excess when you're pregnant is not as much as people think.
My theory is when you're pregnant, I think it's the best time to do intuitive eating. And of course, I know you're on board with that. I know you're not trying to say anything besides that.
No, I totally agree 100%, obviously. Yeah. But it just goes to show, like, again, question yourself. Is it a craving, or what is that? What's really going on? Is it you're stressed? Is what is the trigger that is your quote craving? I don't know. That's a tricky word.
Yeah, I think almost it, going back to just like some personal experience, it's like I think I have a sweet tooth, and I always thought that meant that I should try my hardest to control my sweet tooth. But I've been experimenting for a while now on what it feels like for me to eat sweets every single day. And it's been hard because I had to get past the guilt of like, I'm not allowed to eat. In my head, I've said I'm not allowed to eat a brownie every day. And it's like I'm trying to get past that and see how it feels for me to like live differently, as dramatic as that sounds. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because I think whenever we're on our period, when we're pregnant, the walls come down and we think like, oh my gosh, I'm craving brownies. And it's like, no, actually, you're just like allowing yourself to feel like what you might be feeling every single day, but on a normal day where you don't have hormones and additional stress, you are more able to like push that aside.
This kind of ties into people having cheat meals. And this is one of my biggest pet peeves because, I mean, think about that. Cheat. You have a cheat meal. So you're quote unquote good, which who's by whose standard is good? Like, who is to say that your diet, the way you're eating, is good versus bad? And it sets you up for the cycle of you binge on all these cheat foods that, you know, we think cheat foods, well, obviously they're foods that you enjoy in excess amount. And so it sets you up for that binge, restrict, restrict, restrict all week, deprive yourself because you're saving up for that one quote unquote cheat meal. And then you binge and then you're back on that cycle of, well, I gotta be good during all week because I was so bad, quote unquote bad, on the weekend.
I think another good example of this is like powdered peanut butter. Oh man, I loved powdered peanut butter back in the day. And I still have some and I still use it occasionally. But the idea behind powdered peanut butter was to still eat peanut butter, but just like not have the calories and not have the fat and all of that. And with cheat meals, I found that I always craved peanut butter. I always wanted, like, I could, in theory, I don't think I ever did this, but I could eat like an entire small jar of peanut butter in my head. But since I started to allow myself to have peanut butter, like I eat peanut butter at least every morning, I would say, and I don't measure it, I eat peanut butter. I now I have zero desire to eat a large amount of peanut butter at one sitting. Like I would never like take out the jar and start eating it. Whereas like a couple of years ago, for sure, you bet I would have done that. And it's because I was restricting, because I was trying to replace it and the
rules. Rules are dumb. Case in point. All right. Third dumb rule. You need to eat carbohydrates earlier in the day so that your body can burn them off. Otherwise, if you eat them too close to bedtime, it's going to get stored as body fat.
No. Just a big no. So our body uses the energy that we get from food throughout the entire day, the entire week, the entire month. It's not like you eat a piece of bread and it gets converted into energy like 3 seconds later and then you have that energy available. You know, so it's like when you eat lunch, yes, you do use that fuel throughout the day, you know, the hours following. But if you were to eat a big meal right before bed, your digestion slows down at night, I believe. Katie, you can talk about that. But it's not that your body's going to stop burning calories, though. And we don't even love to talk about calories anymore. But that's just the truth, though, is that your body still is burning calories throughout the evening and the night, even when you're sleeping.
It's so much more complex than that. And some people might find, or this is kind of a, not a wife's tale, but that saying of eat breakfast like a king, eat lunch like a princess, and eat dinner like a pauper. Part of that is because, I mean, we tend to, I mean, if you go to bed on a full stomach, that just doesn't feel well. I mean, you might, your body's trying to digest that large amount of food that it might make it hard for you to sleep. So that's really where that comes from. When we're talking about, you know, energy balance, it's more about the snapshot of the full week. And again, I guess you can get more complex if you're an athlete, right? And talking more about timing of macronutrient intake. But for the general population, for you listening, it's not that deep.
Speaking of athletes, shout out to our episodes that's going to come out next week. We are talking to a sports dietitian about intuitive eating with athletes. So if that resonates with you, definitely check it out because it's going to be awesome.
I mean, I think I'm an athlete, so I'll be there.
You're an athlete and you're a dietitian. So like, what are we even doing with this? Just one last thing about the carbs earlier in the day. What it comes down to is that's just restriction. What you're doing is you're restricting in the evening. You're trying to eat as much as you can earlier in the day and so that you're not eating as much at night. And I think this goes against the natural flow of our days. Like, I do like to eat a big breakfast because then I can stay full and feel good throughout the morning. But most of us don't have a lot of time in the morning. So our breakfasts are more rushed and our lunches might be more small or also rushed. Whereas when it comes to dinner, we actually have a moment to like maybe make our own food, hopefully, and sit down and enjoy it. So I think the idea that we were to eat more in the day, I think that's hard for some people.
Right. So ask yourself, am I staying away from carbs in the evening because I'm trying to restrict and not eat as much? Maybe I'm not eating enough, like you said, throughout the day, which is why I'm so freaking hungry. So this rule is dumb. Why am I doing this? I need to eat more in the evening. Rule number 4. If you're hungry, just drink a glass of water.
Our body is like, what, like 80% water? But like, you're not going to be able to survive off of like replacing food for water. That is just...
Like, if you are getting hunger pangs, you're clearly hungry and you're not thirsty. If you were thirsty, you would have drank. The only time I would suggest this rule is if you're fasting for lab work or some procedure in the morning and you don't have a choice. But otherwise, what you're doing is that you're basically, your body's giving you a physical cue saying, I am hungry, feed me. And what you're doing is you're saying, body, shut up. You're literally shoving water down your throat to tell your stomach to shut up. And you're ignoring those hunger cues. So when you think about it that way, that doesn't make sense.
This makes me think, what's your opinion about dehydration? So we hear a lot of things about if you're thirsty, you're already dehydrated.
Yes, there is some truth to if you're thirsty, you're already somewhat dehydrated, but I think people are different and everyone has different habits as far as what they drink, but you have to remember that all fluids contribute to your water intake. So your coffee contributes, your tea, you know, your milk that's in your shake, whatever you're drinking, the foods that you eat, fruits and vegetables have water content, so you're getting some hydration through there. I think everyone can drink more water. Just because water is an essential function of your body. I mean, we need water to survive. But water is not food. It is separate.
So almost it's like if instead of us saying, if you're hungry, drink a glass of water. It's like if you're hungry, drink a glass of water because water is good for you. And also eat because your body's telling you to eat.
And ask yourself, if I'm getting super hungry between meals, am I eating enough at the previous meal? Am I going too long between meals that I do need a snack? I mean, start to investigate and ask some of those questions about where this is coming from. Or is it that diet tip that you've heard that maybe you're bored and it's not truly hunger that you're feeling and it's some sort of other trigger that's causing you to want to eat? In that case, water isn't still not going to fix the underlying issue.
Very good point. All right, before we get into our last one, which I think is going to be the most controversial and therefore interesting one to discuss, I did want to bring up, you know, when we were kind of getting ready for this episode, I asked David what food rules like he had in his head. Now, he definitely has not been as immersed into diet culture like I have, or like maybe Katie has, but his rule that he thought we should cover was that you shouldn't eat before you swim. So just shout out to David. We're actually not going to talk about that, but if that's what you think of when you think of food rules, you have escaped a lot of the diet culture. So bravo to you.
You're beyond our messaging, and that's a good thing. Maybe we should interview you and get some more tips. Now, this last rule, I hate to admit it, but I too have been guilty of preaching this. And it just goes to show we always need to take a step back from what, am I saying this because everyone else around me is saying it? And really do your research. So sugar addiction. There is no scientific evidence that sugar addiction exists, but so often, like at least once a day, it pops up in my newsfeed of a sugar detox or I'm craving sugar. And you hear women and people talk about ending their sugar addiction.
Yeah. And I think sometimes those words are used playfully. I don't know if that's the right word, but they're not used seriously. So sometimes we're talking, sometimes people are truly talking about being addicted to sugar. Truly addiction. And some people are saying it in more of a sense of like, I have a sweet tooth that I can't control. So I think there needs to be like a definitive separation between those two. We shouldn't probably just should not be using addiction unless we're truly talking about an addiction. But there is no evidence that you can be addicted to sugar.
We can put a link to some of the really good articles that I'm going to reference. But when someone feels out of control, so like Lauren talked about having a sweet tooth and, you know, wanting to eat the whole jar of peanut butter, being out of control or quote unquote addicted to food is not the same thing as having actual scientific evidence that what's going on at the psychological level. So what's going on in your brain? There's something else that they're trying to explain. And I don't think using that word addiction is the right word. Right? That's not explaining what's going on in the psyche.
Yeah. So you're saying that binging is not the same as like acting in an addictive way. It's binging. And then there's something different when you're addicted and your brain is actually responding to chemicals.
Right. And a lot of the research out there has actually been done on rats and rodents. And you always have to question those because we are not animals. We are human beings. There's so much more complexity to that. And, you know, like you said, deprivation often leads to a binge and that compulsive behavior of restrict, 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 deprive from these foods. Eventually you're going to fall out of that cycle. And it's like having a red button on the door with a little kid about his eye level height and saying, don't click the red button, don't click the red button. Obviously, at some point, a 2-year-old is going to click the red button if you turn away. So I love the take-home message that dietitian Marcy Evans has in the article that we're going to link. She's actually a certified eating disorder dietitian and helps supervise those dietitians who are trying to get licensed in that. So she's very knowledgeable in this topic, but she says, don't fall victim to headlines. Just because food and drugs share common neural pathways does not mean that food is addictive. There's far more to the story. And I just think that, like, amen, that's so true.
And although I studied neurobiology in college, like I probably should know that there's a difference. Like we should probably be able to talk more intelligently about this, but we have bought into the marketing of food being addictive and sugar being addictive. And that, just like you said in the beginning of like how you have preached this before, I have too preached this and I've believed it in my own life. And it, you don't know better until you know better. And that's just the thing.
It really dials down to the compulsive behaviors and your relationship with food. And is sugar the issue or is it the control? Like, so ask yourself that. Why do I feel that I am addicted to sugar? And is that what's going on? Or what else, you know, assess the other areas of your life and in those situations where you feel that loss of control and you feel that compulsion to eat a ton of cookies or eat a whole jar of peanut butter. I mean, think about those moments and chances are there's a lot more going on in those situations where you feel triggered to go for sugar.
So as you're listening to this, we really want you to just start thinking about the rules that you have in your head. Whether or not you've heard of any of the rules that we discussed, you likely have your own little rules in your head. And there could be a possibility that these rules are working for you, maybe, but maybe not. And so we want you to start questioning why you do what you do and if it's helping you or if it's hurting you.
And I almost challenge what I've just said as well, but is what you're following, is it science-based? Is it research-based? And more importantly, what's the reasoning behind you following that rule? For example, I'll use myself as an example tonight. I did a lifting workout and then I had to be on a call. And so part of me wanted to just shovel a protein shake or a bar down my throat. Okay, that's a very terrible visual. But right, like I want to just eat really fast to get that fuel in. But in my brain is I want to maximize my my gains from the gym. And I know science tells us that if you consume X amount of protein within an hour, that's going to decrease your soreness and promote your muscular strength, versus the mentality of I'm going to shove a bar or a protein shake down my throat because I just worked out and that's why I can't have a big meal because it's the evening, right? Mm-hmm. So even if these rules are truth or not truth, still ask yourself those questions, because chances are there's a lot more to whatever it is you're following.
Let us know what you think about this episode and let us know what things you've been following. Maybe that you're like, oh my gosh, light bulb moment. Why am I doing this? And like we said, next week we are talking to another dietitian about sports nutrition and intuitive eating. And you definitely want to tune into that one because it's going to be really good too.
And shout out to Marie Rowe, who she's my girl. I posted this and she just was like, give me 10 minutes and just rapid fire listed all these questions that she has. So Marie, don't worry. I know we didn't get to all your questions, but we got you, girl. We're going to address them in a later episode.
That's it for this episode. Find us on Instagram at FitFriendsHappyHour. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. You can on iTunes/Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on Stitcher and Spotify. And we haven't asked in a while, but if you guys could write us a review, we would absolutely love you. It helps us grow the podcast so we can keep doing this because we do love it. All right, we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.